Hey guys, it's Mina. Wanted to remind you to download and subscribe to one of my favorite football podcasts, The Bill Barnwell Show. Bill is awesome. He's someone I rely on to just be the best, smartest football guy on planet Earth. He has awesome guests, including sometimes yours truly. Give it a listen. I think you'll really like it. You can find The Bill Barnwell Show wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Media Climb Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks stuffing is exclusively what you rip out of a toy, literally within the first 5 seconds of getting a toy. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. I am delighted to be joined today by a first-time guest, which is actually really bonkers to say because I have known him for a long time. And I also feel like him and I have not only a bunch of friends in common, but also a bunch of podcast guests and co-hosts in common. At this point, it's a little incestuous. Robert Mays, welcome to the podcast.
I'm okay with that, though. I feel like it's just a sign that we both have good taste. So I'm going to just ride with it and not even think twice.
It's like two GMs who just keep trading back like players. I was trying to think of an example on the fly, but it's not really like a thing that happens very often in the NFL. I guess it's only like a bad example would be like if you were Belichick and I was Patricia and I kept signing your cast offs. But this is actually a bad transition, but every Monday you do an excellent, I guess, Sunday night podcast on your show, The Athletic Football Show, with our mutual friend, Nate Tice, who listeners know from my show, The Athletic Football Show. You can catch it wherever you get your podcast as well. And you write about football for The Athletic. And I think we've had some other mutual, you've had Steven Ruiz on, right? I think Bill.
Yeah. I think the comparison I would make, it's like Shanahan and McVay stealing plays from one another.
Oh, wow.
That's a much more flattering way to frame it.
Who's Shanahan and who's McVay? Wow, this is getting gross. I kind of want to be Shanahan, but after last night, I'm feeling pretty good about McVay. Like, we're recording this on Tuesday, but football just happened. As always, we're going to talk about some of the biggest stories, topics, questions of the week, and we're going to talk about the Rams, which is a team that I haven't gotten to into this on the show in a while now. But Robert, the first game, two teams that I want to talk to you about is another pair of teams that I don't think I've spent nearly enough time as I should devoted to, and I think it's the best game of this coming Sunday. That's Titans-Colts. I'll just start here. I am pumped and jacked for this football game.
It's great because these are teams I talk and think about a lot. We just did a deep Rams segment on my podcast today, and I seem to talk about the Colts every single time I open my mouth and discuss football. Yeah, I think it's for a few different reasons. One, I am the world's biggest, I think, Philip Rivers booster. That's not a former Chargers fan. I've made that well known. I've always loved him, and I just think that the Colts have done a great job building that team. I love Quentin Nelson. I'm a big offensive line person. So a lot of the values they've had and the way they've constructed that roster align with mine. So yeah, these are teams I think about a lot. So I'm very ready to go with this.
Excellent. Well, let's start with Rivers. I'm in there. I mean, I think like he is like the joy division of football writers, quarterbacks. I don't know. This analogies are so bad today, but I think.
No, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Man, the football writer, he's like your favorite football writer's favorite quarterback as a player. And this season, he got off to a pretty rough start. And I think that's partially why a lot of people stopped talking about the Colts or didn't pay a ton of attention to them early on, is because of, like, they had that weird, embarrassing loss to the Jags, right? And he looked bad, and it was like, oh, wait, no, he's going to throw a lot of picks and they're going to be bad. And then people kind of took their eye off the ball. And first, the defense got really good. And then Rivers himself, I think, started actually improving as the season went on. And now we're coming off of a Packers game in which I, like, unequivocally feel confident saying Philip Rivers won them that game, right? Like, the defense was good. They were great in the second half and they came up in big moments. They struggled in the first. And finally, Jonathan Taylor emerged. You got some nice Michael Pittman Jr. moments. But like Philip Rivers, I don't know if that was his best game of the year, but to me, like, that's the if we're actually going to talk about the Colts being a legitimate, can compete with the Chiefs Super Bowl contender, that's the version of Philip Rivers you're going to have to see.
I mean, I think that this version of Philip Rivers is similar to the one we've seen in recent years. You're going to have pretty steady great high-level play from him most of the time, punctuated by some mind-boggling decisions. And that's what was happening at the beginning of the year. You know, their offense and their passing game, I mean, their efficiency numbers were great. He was making a lot of really nice throws, but the bad ones stand out. The picks stand out. And I think we're still in that mode. I don't think much about him has changed, but with the way that that defense has played and the amount of steady play you've seen from him, they've won enough games where it seems like it's time to start paying attention again.
Yes. And then they've had, like, you know, I mentioned Michael Pittman Jr., Mo Alley Cox. Like, they've had guys, Zach Pascal, you know, T.Y. Hilton continues to be the world's most frustrating fantasy pick. Not to make this about me, but there's sort of a coherent offense emerging. That said, I did want to ask you a question that I myself struggle with. And because you think about the Colts a lot, I'm hoping you can answer this for me. Frank Reich is a good coach, right? Because
Frank Reich is a fantastic coach.
Okay. Like 90% of the time, I'm like, you're really good. Like I think about in this game against the Packers, God, the touchdown to Burton, I think was the one. First of all, it was a phenomenal throw by Rivers. But for once, it was interesting too, because the Packers play so much dime, but for once they were in base. And it been largely because the Colts had all their tight ends on the field. And it was just like, you know, Rivers, he manipulated the safety with his eyes. Perfect play, perfect call, perfect, just like everything about it. So great. I think the touchdown to Hines is really nice too. And I think like on a play-to-play basis, I love Frank Reich. I love Frank Reich's aggression. But every now and then, like, there's something that frustrates me, whether it's, like, there's certain drives where, the run-pass balance is, like, a little bit off. I think it was last week I joked to Will Brinson that, like, he's, like, the world's most aggressive, least aggressive coach in ways.
Oh, that's Sean McVay.
we'll get to that. But I don't know. I think he's really good, but there are times that I find him a bit frustrating.
I think they're still in kind of a feeling out phase when it comes to their offensive personnel. I know that's weird to say because they have a 38-year-old quarterback and the offensive line has been there for a little while and Hilton is such a known quantity. But I think with the rest of it, they're still figuring it out. You know, Pittman is somebody who was hurt for a good chunk of this year. I think they're still feeling out the right way to use him and how he fits with the rest of the passing personnel. And I still think they're figuring out what that backfield looks like. You know, they like all those guys and they all do something a little bit different. But where you'd think, all right, let's hammer it away with Taylor. Hines is somebody we can use in the passing game. There have been times where their running game looks more efficient with Hines as the guy back there. Yeah. The Titans game is a perfect example. So I still think they're trying to feel out the right way to use these guys, the right way to kind of find that balance. I have faith in their ability to do it. I went back and I watched the Titans game in preparation for this, and I think that's one of those moments where you kind of step back, take a 360-degree view, and so many of those players are like, man, he's just dialing it up right now. And that's how I feel about Frank Reich. So there has been some growing pains, and I do think there's sort of an adjustment period with Rivers, with all the guys they're trying to fold in. But I think they're on the right track, and I absolutely think they have a chance to figure it out by the time it really matters.
I completely agree with you about the backs. I think, I can't remember, there was some take about like how Marlon Mack wasn't good when they drafted John Taylor. I was like, wait, what? Marlon Mack's good. Like, it's just nobody knows he exists outside of Indianapolis, but he's like a good back. And I think that
they were surprised no one called about Wilkins. They thought that somebody this August was going to call about Wilkins because they really like him. And they thought they had such a long jam that somebody would make a call and no one did.
Well, this is like the first real good Jonathan Taylor game, but of course it was against a absolute dumpster fire run defense in Green Bay. Titans aren't that much better, right? Like the reason I picked the Titans, or I picked the Colts rather, to win the last game, and I think it was an upset was because the Titans didn't have a pass rush, and my feeling at the time was like, well, if you can't, you know, rush Rivers, he's not going to throw a dumb pick. The Titans now lost Jadeveon Clowney. They lost Jayon Brown, which is something that's not being talked about very much.
I love Jayon Brown.
You know, so he's not as good this year as he was last year, but these losses are going to add up. Now, like in this last game against Baltimore for Tennessee, like this is probably the defense's best performance of the year. I mean, maybe that's being dramatic, but you had a bunch of like the contributors you need to step up, like your Harold Landry obviously made sort of that game-sealing play. Jeffrey Simmons is very good. But then you had guys like you know, Amani Hooker. I always am worried if I'm accusing Malik and Amani. Amani Hooker. Oh my God, these Kings are playing. Kevin Pryor and Malcolm Butler, like, all played more, like, they played more similarly to how they did last year. I still think that this is a, like, advantage Colts on this side of the ball.
I definitely do. I just think the Titans defense isn't very good. And one of the things that Frank Reich did a really good job of the last time these two teams played, they went to empty a lot, and not even just on third down, but I think consistently throughout the game, because the Titans defensive personnel is bad enough that if you know what they're running, you have no shot. And Rivers is so good at diagnosing that stuff. When they'd go empty and he would be able to just distinguish information before the snap, it was easy pickings. And I think that this is going to be the same sort of thing. Rivers is so good at identifying what other teams are doing. And when your personnel isn't very good, he's going to have an advantage every single time. And I think that I would not be surprised if that's the exact way that this played out when those two sides have the ball.
As you're saying that, do you think Dean Pease is, like, one of the most underrated losses of the offseason?
100%.
Because you're talking about how, like, okay, you know, with Philip Rivers diagnosing, like, the Titans defense before, you used to have no idea what the hell they were doing, like, before, you know, like, this is one of the more confusing defenses in the NFL last year under Pease. And I don't think that's the case anymore.
They, on third down, the bag of stuff he had available to him. And I actually listened to a really good podcast that he did recently with Steve Ass, who does, he's a defensive coordinator in high school, and he does a podcast that talks solely about defense. And Dean Pease was on there, and he was going through essentially how he puts together those pressure packages. And when you listen to the process, it's just crazy. I mean, this is like 25, 30 years of building these different sorts of pressures, and he'd have little tiny code words that he would switch out for when the safety would be a part of the pressure instead of the nickel. And that's the fun part, is a lot of guys, I think, that are longtime coaches, sometimes you have a hard time keeping up with the way the league is changing. I think that Brandon Staley coming in for the Rams is a great example of that.
Yeah.
But you still have this backlog of stuff, and especially on third down, when, you know, the game isn't that different and it's really just about scheming up one-on-ones and finding advantages, that's where I think having that bag of tricks matters so much. And I think his bag was as deep as any defensive coach in the league.
Titans fans are like, we don't care about having tricks on third down. We just like to not be historically bad anymore. And they weren't. They weren't against Baltimore. But we'll see how that goes. I think the other side of the football is where you get your strength on strength matchup with the Tennessee offense, although lately it hasn't been a source of strength. It wasn't a source of strength even in the last game until, like, the fourth quarter and overtime. Now, this Titans offense is built for that time of the game because it is when you are exhausted, and every single human on the Titans offense is the human you don't want to see across from you in the fourth quarter. I feel like that's not overstating it. Like, that is the identity of their team. They are just exhausting. But they were not good for most of the Ravens game. Like, until, I want to say, like, midway through the third quarter, Ryan Tannehill had completed, like, less than 10 passes.
It was something like 4 of 11 for 43 yards or something like that. It was pretty brutal. And it was at the 940 mark. It was right when Andrew scored that touchdown, I think. So it was
And you were like, this is over. You're right. And I was like, all right, this is really cooked, you know, whatever. And then they went into, like, Tannehill went into God mode on that one drive. But I think a lot of that also had to do with the Ravens defense just being gassed, which was banged up. I think that this Colts defense, which is, I have talked about them at some length of this podcast, you know, they're very disciplined. They do what they do. They want to keep the ball in front of them. Like, you have to beat them over the top. If Ryan Tannehill can't complete deep shots off of play action in the first half, I don't see how they win this game.
I'm back and forth about the Titans offense, because I was kind of like you when they had the little stumble over the last few weeks here. I was like, oh, well, all right, the gimmick is over. Like, they've been found out. This is just a bells and whistles sort of team that needs that play action stuff to really function. But this is still one of the best, most efficient offenses in the league. I still think they're third in offensive DVOA. Like, Tannehill is third in EPA per player among quarterbacks. And one of the reasons they're so high in DVOA is because look at the schedule they faced over the last month. Throw the Bengals game out, because that wasn't a very good game. But other than the Bengals game, the defenses they've played lately are the Steelers, the Bears, the Colts, and the Ravens. And those are all top three, top five. I mean, the teams they struggled against are all top five defenses. And if I went back again, I went back and watched that game against the Colts. They had 17 points in the first half. A.J. Brown dropped the potential touchdown down the left sideline. And then you think about the punts. They had a 17-yard punt in the second half, and they had a punt blocked for a touchdown. So I think that game was a lot closer than it seemed. But, and I don't know if the Baltimore second half is a turning point necessarily, but I think some of the stuff they tapped into, whether it's Henry crushing people, quick game with A.J. Brown just making people not want to be alive anymore, Firkser in certain high-leverage spots where he's getting open, and Tannehill using his legs and some play-action shots. They really went back into their identity against a really good Ravens defense, and I just think that that version of them is still possible. I still think they're dangerous.
Well, let me ask you this about the Colts defense, though, because I agree with you about the Titans stuff, and I love, by the way, that they like stuck to that, you know, to the bitter end,
totally.
Right? Like, what do you perceive to be the weaknesses on this Colts defense? Because I think they were a little bit overrated from the early schedule. But I think at this point we can like safely say that they're very good. And I don't think there's like huge holes. I just said, I know you got to attack them over the top. And that was my feeling going into the Green Bay game. I thought the Colts defense was a bad matchup for Rodgers because teams with really good linebackers have been good against Green Bay. Obviously, the Colts have some of the better linebackers in the NFL. Do you think like there's a clear, like how would you attack this Colts defense? Just generally, forget about Tennessee. Just generally, what do you think is like their soft spot?
I think outside corner is not a strength of theirs. I think they're extremely well coached and they put their guys in great spots. The Yasin interception is a perfect example of that. So the Colts play more cover two than any other team in the league, which they're a throwback in that regard. And Rodgers thought he had that hole shot behind the corner in front of the safety. Yeah. And Yasin, because the receiver over him crossed his face, went over, he's like, I'm booking it back. And that's a coaching point. And you see that with them. It's really cool to watch their linebackers against play action. They'll step forward, but then they just get on their horse getting depth after they recognize it.
Are you thinking about the Okereke fourth down?
That's exactly right.
To Jamal Williams. Yeah, we highlighted that one at NFL Live because if you just watch him the whole time, it's incredible to watch him on that play because 9 out of 10 linebackers, that's a completion.
And I think that you see that all over their defense. Like, I think Julian Blackmon is going to be a fantastic player, But he plays so fast because you can tell that he's just extremely well coached. I mean, he takes grass when it's there. He knows exactly where he's supposed to be all the time. Curry Willis does a lot of that stuff. He made a fantastic play that I tweeted out today on third down the last two teams played. But I think that they're so dependent on being in the right spots and being that well coached that on a talent level, they still lack it on the back end. And I feel like if you put those guys in conflict or you make it's essentially just make it a talent game. Like I need to make sure that my guy can beat your guy. I still think there are offenses that can take advantage of them.
That's kind of where I go back to like what I was saying about like the Titans taking like a deep shot early on. Like, doesn't that just feel like, okay, Khalif Raymond or, you know, like the Colts want you to, they like want to keep the ball in front of them. And I just feel like they lack the back end speed to win every time. They're going to win some of the time, and they're going to force overthrows, and they're going to get pressure, and DeForest Buckner is a freaking monster who we don't talk about enough. Holy smokes, that's worked out for them. But also, by the way, the Titans lost Luan's replacement.
Tyson Brallo.
Yeah, so that's something to keep an eye on, by the way. But I just think if I'm Tennessee, like, you're not going to win this game with Derrick Henry, guys. Like, you're not. Or, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to do the thing where in the fourth quarter, you're going to be like, oh, my God, it's Derrick Henry. No one wants to tackle him anymore. Sure. But you can't fall behind to the point where you're in the position to not take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think that taking advantage of some of the deep shots when you can get them, like if they're not playing too high and they're trying to be worried about the run and you can take advantage of one of those corners on the outside, I think that's one of them. And just stuff that works against zone, trying to high-low those corners in the same way that the Packers did a couple times. So the problem is their linebackers are so good in the middle of the field. Rodgers talked about this today. He played a little game where he threw a no-look pass to a dig to Devontae at one point in that game because he was playing with Darius Leonard. And Tannehill doesn't have that. That's the problem. Is that there's no kind of playmaking outside of structure aspect to this team except Tannehill using his legs. So a team that's really disciplined like the Colts are, it's hard to hurt them when you're not doing stuff outside of structure. And that's just an element that the Titans offense doesn't really have.
I am leaning Colts, if it's not obvious from our discussion. It sounds like you might be the same.
Yeah, I am too. I just think that the Colts are a better team right now. But again, I still think that the Titans offense playing against any defense outside of the top five is dangerous down the stretch.
Well, speaking of teams that are dangerous down the stretch, the other team I wanted to ask you about is a team that I really haven't talked about a lot. And that is our Los Angeles Rams, my hometown traitor team. I picked against them to lose to the Bucks. First of all, the Bucks are just pure chaos. I'm not talking about them today. I've talked about them enough. There's so much to discuss with the Bucks, but Robert, I picked against them because the Miami game was fresh in my mind. Watching Jared Goff get absolutely tortured by Brian Flores and that Dolphins blitz. Like, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about the Bucs, and I was like, oh, this is going to happen again. And then the Bucs have the best run defense in the NFL. What I didn't account for, because I am a big dumb, is that the Rams had a lot of time to think about that game and to think about what kind of adjustments shall we make against a very heavily blitzing defense. And you saw the fruits of that. We'll talk about the other side of the ball in a second. But with what Sean McVay did with that offense, because the Rams broke so many tendencies in this game. It was honestly it was not shocking to me because McVay does do that. He isn't always like, I'm going to do the exact same thing every time, da da da. But this is, season highs, career highs in some cases in passing on early downs, passing out of the gun, passing out of empty. Like, the quick game was absolutely on fire. The screens, the sprint outs. I thought this was just an incredible performance by Sean McVay and, Goff as well. Aside from the interceptions, I think he was fairly accurate and poised and got the ball out really quickly.
I thought he played great. I think he was 31 of 39. For 323 yards without play action in this game.
That's never happened to Jared Goff. I can just tell you.
That's never happened. And I had the same thought as you. I was like, man, if the Bucks bring heat the way we expect them to, I don't know what they're going to do. And they just didn't play the way they normally do. Like, we're not turning our back to the defense. We're not going to let you slot pressure us to death on first down while we're running boots into it. And I loved it. It's one of my favorite parts about watching the Rams is that it's so cool to watch them problem solve in real time.
Totally.
To watch them figure out different sorts of wrinkles. And we had a huge conversation about them today on our show, and both on offense and defense. I just think they look at the game and say, why not try this? Why not? They see possibilities and stuff, and they push things to the extreme in pretty much every single aspect of the game. And I think that's why they're one of the most fascinating franchises in the entire league. I could talk about them all day.
You know, I mentioned this on live. I was watching, it's Brady and Goff, right? So I was thinking about the 13-3 Super Bowl. I feel like I talk about the freaking 13-3 Super Bowl all the time, but I don't care. It's football nerds love that Super Bowl, so deal with it. And I was thinking about Sean McVay after that game. And I think you were there, Robert. I feel like we saw each other.
I was.
And he looked shell-shocked, right? Because that Super Bowl was a coaching masterpiece from Bill Belichick. He came in and he changed, so many of the things the Pats did on defense, and McVay wasn't ready. People who listen to this podcast have heard me talk about it to no end. And I was thinking about that watching this game because I was like, oh, McVay is doing what Belichick does. He, he is showing that he is willing to completely break tendency and change this offense on the fly. And this is an offense that's been evolving now since 2018 in subtle ways, but what we saw versus Tampa was dramatic, and I was super impressed by them. And I think also it was sustainable, because he has the horses to do that, right? He's got, they've built this perfect army of receivers who can do everything. And, oh, you want a quick game? Oh, you want Cooper Kupp on a sprint out? They've got the guys. I mean, God, that tunnel screen to Woods to end the first half.
It's a perfect call.
Jesus. Let me ask you this. The Rams defense is very good. They rank very high against the pass in just about every metric. They're really good against deep pass, which is perhaps something that the coaches on the other side of the football should have accounted for. Do you think that that what we saw versus Tampa was about the Rams defense's excellence, or do you think it was about this sort of weird, chaotic, disjointed Bucs offense?
I think it's a combination of the two. I think that they gave Brady some problems with the way the defense looked. You know, I went back and I watched that last interception probably 50 times, and it looks like quarters before the play.
Yep.
He assumed that because it looked like quarters, he was going to have that inside slot shot as a one-on-one, pretty much de facto man coverage in that spot. And that's not what ended up happening. And the safety came over. Fuller was right there. I don't know if that was a coaching point or if they actually were disguising the coverage, but you see that stuff all the time. They're playing this pattern match quarters coverage under Brandon Staley that's not dissimilar to a lot of the stuff the Broncos have done under Fangio and what Fangio's done for years. And you can just see that it's so well communicated to the players. And I think Darius Williams is the perfect example of that. That guy is playing so fast.
Such a great story.
So fast. I mean, the balls he broke up, the one against Antonio Brown on the left sideline and the one where he came downhill on that short throw to Gronk, that's just the guy who knows exactly where he's supposed to be at all times. And I think that I love watching them schematically because I think it's really fun. But I also think they're a study in resource allocation. They have Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald making whatever those guys are making. They gave up 2 first-round picks to get Ramsey. And they have those two guys as these focal points of the defense, one in the front, one in the back, and everything revolves around them. And they have all these cheap guys at these other positions, whether it's a 6th-round pick or Jordan Fuller, or a guy that got on waivers and Darius Williams, or Leonard Floyd, who's making $3 million bucks next year. And they have those two guys as the thing you balance everything on, and everything else comes off of that. And I just think it's such a fascinating way to think about a defensive unit. And again, they're taking everything to the extreme, and it's working so, so well for them right now.
Yeah, and so for those who don't know, the Rams' new defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley, he comes from the Vic Fangio tree. And it was a surprising hire because he was, you know, like Wade Phillips did a good job. It was a good defense. So, you know, there was a lot of questions after McVay made that change, and clearly it's paid off. I think you're so right to highlight the play of the secondary because, you know, the Rams, the pass rush has been potent, and it feels like this year you're finally starting to get something in addition to Donald with Floyd. And, you know, they've had some success up front. I think they rank probably in the top half of the league in pass rush win rate. But a lot of those sacks are coverage sacks. They get like the coverage is just so good. And, you know, like I agree with you. I think it was kind of a combination of things where I really didn't like the Bucs play calling. It's a whole separate thing. But guys covered up, man. Like, and the kind of games that they've been playing, it's so different from the Rams defenses of old. I mean, heck, you can ask Bruce Arians about it. Tom Brady was confused. So I just love that psychodrama. But yeah, let's wrap here. So the Rams right now are, this is, by the way, interesting. I just pulled it up. The Brady was only pressured 18.4% of the time. So it really, the coverage was really spectacular. And they're able to get pressure without blitzing. They blitz at a very low rate compared to the rest of the NFL, which, you know, it's a study in styles between them and the Bucs. Do you think
it's really funny watching them try to get pressure? Because like we talked about with Pease, where he's got 35 years of backlog information, Staley's building that menu for himself. And you, again, the problem solving in real time. They were having trouble getting after the quarterback when it wasn't Donald early in the season. And they've upped the amount of guys they've had in their rotation. And when you watch them, and when you watch them, they're trying everything. They're lining guys up in all these weird ways. Yeah. They're using all these stunts. It's so cool, again, just to watch them try to figure this stuff out. And in his first year as a defensive coordinator, I think the process he's gone through and trying to do that has been really telling.
And you're so right about the team building aspect. It's like, okay, like we were joking on Twitter. I can't remember. It was mentioned on the Monday Night Football broadcast that people might draft Aaron Donald early on. And I was asking you kind of jokingly how many people would actually take Aaron Donald. Like, what? How many quarterbacks would you get through before you got to Aaron Donald, which is like a whole separate podcast we could do. But if you were drafting defenses, I really think the Rams show, like, if you have an elite, and it's interesting, like, because this question, would you rather have like an Aaron Donald type or a Khalil Mack type? I think Aaron Donald's more dominant, obviously, but there's some interesting debates to be had too about, from like a positional perspective, like what's easier to build around? Is it easier to find complementary edge rushers or to build a complementary edge rush than it is to have a guy on the inside who you can move across the line as Aaron Donald is used? But the Rams did it. You've got the elite defensive tackle and an elite corner. And like we said, Staley deserves a ton of credit, but he also, it's a pretty nice place to start. Yeah.
The problem with Aaron Donald is, I think that Aaron Donald is going to teach you some wrong lessons about how you should build a team. Because when you watch the impact he has and the things he opens up for other people, it's often because he is ending up one or two gaps over from where the play starts. His lateral quickness and his ability to just kind of jump all over the place changes the entire complexion of a front four. So there are just so few players at that position who would even be able to consider playing like that, that it's almost a non-starter. Like, he's not a traditional inside interior rusher. So if you just say, well, let's build around an interior rusher, there's no one else on the planet that you can
do
that with.
Right, he can do what he does. Yeah, we track, you know, like pass rush wins, which is when you beat your blocker in 2.5 seconds or left. And I'm pretty sure he's the only defensive lineman with a win at like literally every tech. I'd also add he can give GMs bad takes on other players. Atlanta Falcons, Dante Fowler. Because it's a lot easier to get sacks when you're next to Aaron Donald. Speaking of GMs and making decisions, that doesn't even make sense because it's really the coach who made this call, but let's take a quick break and then let's talk Taysom.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MinaShow.
Okay, so my question about Taysom Hill is pretty simple. Can he keep this up?
My knee-jerk reaction is no.
It's complicated because you have to account for who they're playing. You have to account for can he keep it up the long term? Can he keep it up for 3 or 4 games? Like, there's so many different layers to this Taysom conversation. But go.
Do you know how many yards per attempt he averaged on play action on Sunday?
Well, I'm looking at the EPA splits between play action and not play action, and let me tell you, they are different.
He averaged 16.8 yards per attempt on 13 play action dropbacks. He averaged 5 yards per attempt without play action.
But the Taysom Hill debut is like the ultimate you can't trust numbers game. Like, literally everything.
It's one game, and I don't want to put too much stock into that. But they really built the plane out of play action, which for Taysom Hill on Sunday. And he did some stuff that was pretty nice. Like, there were a couple moments where he's going through progressions and coming off reads. But at the same time, the training wheels were very, very big. I mean, that guy is riding a big wheel during that game. And I don't know what it's going to look like when they're forced out of that sort of approach. So I tend to think it's not sustainable, but I also have a lot of faith in Sean Payton. He's such a good thinker and such a good problem solver when it comes to offense. And he knows exactly the right buttons to push with every quarterback he's ever had in New Orleans. Think about the numbers that Teddy Bridgewater put up last year. So I think that he'll get the most out of Taysom Hill. I just think, similar to what we talked about before, when you get out of the comfort zone and you're forced to play a different style than you want to, I just don't know how well that's going to work for them.
Yeah, I mean, the question I think is like, okay, well, what's next? Like, is there another iteration of this, or are we going to see that sort of same formula against Denver? Very different opponent from Atlanta, where, you know, they're gonna bring out six offensive linemen and it's gonna be play action over the middle to Michael Thomas, rinse and repeat. Now, a lot of people, I think, I'll say this about Taysom Hill, beyond like the intermediate passing was much more accurate than I expected.
Definitely.
Like, I mean, he can't throw it deep for, you know, shit, but, and he was...
The Emmanuel Sanders underthrown ball is one of the most gorgeous things I've ever seen.
I've watched that play underthrown by
10 yards.
I've watched that play like six times. When it happened in real time, I was so... And it was fortunately before the half, so I had the half. I was like, I don't understand what happened here. Like, I just... physics were defied. It's like when you watch a Mahomes play and you're like, wow, like, how did that happen? Like,
yeah, that's how the exact opposite.
I was just like, what the heck happened? But, he was actually quite accurate, I thought. You know, he was zipping some balls over the middle of the field. But the question is, okay, what if, like, now we know. Like, Vic Fangio knows. That's the plan, you know? So, like, that first – but that doesn't necessarily mean it's easily stopped. Like, offenses have been built out of a lot of play action to the best receiver on the field. Like, that's not that crazy. It's not – you know, like, it's not bells and whistles and trickery. Like, so I guess I don't think we saw any evidence that there's more than that. But I also think that that is potentially a sustainable offense in the short term, especially when the defense is playing out of its freaking mind.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, this style is much more palatable when you don't need to score 35 points and they can bleed the game dry. Are they playing like the best defense in the NFL right now? I think the answer is yes.
Okay, so it's close between them and Pittsburgh if you do like the last 3 or 4 weeks, but they're 1-2 in just about every metric.
What a huge win for you with Trey Hendrickson. Just banging the Trey Hendrickson table before the year.
I appreciate that. Oh, thank you for noticing. I feel like when I went on your pod, we were like talking about the Saints and we were like, there's no way this defense is that bad. Like, you and I were like, can't continue. They're too talented. And that ultimately proved to be true. They are too talented.
What they have up front, I mean, they are just absolutely dominating. And I think that they've played such a fun game where they're really running a lot of five-man simulated pressures or pressures where they'll just walk to Mario Davis down. So you're sitting there with Marcus Davenport, Cam Jordan, Trey Hendrickson, David Onyemata, and Demario Davis standing over your five offensive linemen. I'd just quit. I would just be like, you know what? The game is over. I really appreciate you guys coming, but I'm not going to engage in this. It's a terrifying group, and they are using them pretty much to perfection right now.
I mean, also, like, again, what was the pass rush wasn't actually terrible the first 8 weeks or so of the season. Right. It was the secondary that was constantly having these like perplexing busts or like, and it was like I said to you, it was weird because it was like different guys against Atlanta. I know Julio was out a lot of the game or injured, but most of those Matt Ryan sacks were coverage sacks. Like, guys were not open in that game. This is like the secondary we were promised. And
I think this
they're the best team. They're the best team in the NFC minus quarterback. I feel comfortable saying that.
Oh, I absolutely think they are. Top to bottom, I think they have the best roster. I thought they had the best roster coming into the season.
Yeah.
I thought that they were the best team in the NFC. I picked them to go to the Super Bowl. I stood by that at midseason. I thought that they were the best team. And I just think they have so much talent. And we always want to try to figure this stuff out schematically, right? It's like, well, what are they doing? Are they doing something different? Like, why isn't this working? I truly think that their guys on the back end.
Totally.
They play when they want to. I mean, yeah. It's sometimes that simple. I think when Janoris Jenkins and Marshawn Lattimore are engaged.
Maybe Marshawn Lattimore was the problem.
He didn't play. When those guys want to play, they're pretty darn good. And I think that as things get a little bit tighter, we get toward the playoffs, these games really start to matter. I think that they have, in my opinion, what is still the most talented defense top to bottom in the entire league.
The question is just, one, can Breeze come back? And two, what's he going to look like? I mean, dude broke 11 ribs. First of all, I did not know that the human body had that many ribs. I'll just be honest. I saw that number and I was like, okay, so at like 11 out of 12, you know, like wow. Apparently it's 24. Wait, I got that right, right? 24 ribs. Anyways, I didn't know.
You could tell me any number and I would believe you. You have 36 ribs. I'd be like, yeah, that sounds right.
And then if the other question is, you know, is Drew Brees going to do the Drew Brees thing that he's done the last two seasons where he's significantly worse at the end of the year? So, but all that, who knows? Maybe it'll be good for him to have time. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying getting 11 year ribs broken is good because that is horrible and I feel really bad for him. And I felt bad for him in real time and I was actually shocked when he went back on the field because that's one of the most painful looking hits I've ever seen. Yeah, the Saints are really good. The only question for me right now is quarterback. Speaking of quarterbacks, brings me to the most positive segment on the Mina Kimes show. It's called Who Caught Your Eye? Can you guess who I'm going to say?
I can't. I'm very much looking forward to it, though.
It's a positive, so who do you think? Just guess.
From last week?
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, it's Deshaun Watson. So, but this isn't a long segment. We keep it short. We just praise, you know, someone we want to praise. The thing I want to talk specifically about one aspect of Deshaun Watson's game, which is because, you know, he's been incredible, and it doesn't matter. Although he did win, so it did matter. That was like the worst timed. I think I tweeted like Deshaun Watson proves wins aren't a quarterback stat. Of course they.
And then they won.
Yeah, I know. what jumped out to me in that game, when I had the chance to watch it in its entirety, was how effing unbothered he was. And some of that is because the Patriots pass rush sucks, for sure. But
yeah, he got hit twice.
game. Speaking of ribs, right? Like, we're only 3 years removed from the year that, or 2 years, the year that Deshaun Watson couldn't take a plane or whatever. He is taking fewer sacks. He has a career low right now in sack percentage. And it is having Deshaun Watson is the guy who gets trotted out often for the quarterback sacks or quarterback stat guy, you know? And I think you are watching, whether it's him throwing it away or subtle pocket movements or just his vision, you are seeing fewer negative plays. And it's dramatically, not dramatically, because he's always been good, but it's one of the things that's elevated his performance this year to me.
I think he's taking a step forward. I think there's no denying it. I mean, right now, we talked about it on our show on Sunday night. Outside of Mahomes, if you're building a team for the next 5 years, I don't even think it's a conversation for him being the number two quarterback.
Yeah. Next 5 years, you said?
Yeah. So Russell would be 32 to 36.
Yeah. Yeah. Pre-haircut Justin Herbert? No, I'm just kidding. I do love Justin Herbert, though. Yeah, it's Watson. He's the guy. No question.
I mean, would you watch them on Sunday? And obviously there was no pressure, but the ball placement on some of those throws
stupid.
Were just absolutely unbelievable. Stupid. Also, only four teams last week lost more EPA on running plays than the Texans did. They were averaging 1.5 yards per carry on first down. It's every single time it's like second and nine. It's like, all right, Deshaun, you go do your thing. The guy has had so much success in an offense that is not catered in any way to quarterback success.
In any way.
They still haven't discovered what a screen pass is. They have, outside of Mahomes and Russell, probably the third best vertical passer in the entire league. And they're like, you know what? Play action is overrated.
I was just about to pull up the play action stats because it makes me so angry looking at it. Oh my God.
It's really frustrating. And that's why, I said this earlier this week. This is the most depressed I've ever been about Deshaun Watson not going to Chicago. And I'm a Bears fan, and I, you would think the timing on that is strange. But watching a franchise that's in utter disarray, like the Texans are, and then watching the Bears who are in utter disarray, it doesn't matter in one of those cases. It doesn't matter who the GM is going to be. It doesn't matter who the coach is. The Texans are going to have a chance to be good by 2022 because they have Deshaun Watson. It's all that matters. That's how good he is, and that's how important it is to find your quarterback no matter what sort of nonsense is happening in every other level of your team.
Who caught your eye this week?
You know, this is a guy who I think is totally random. They won this game, but this is not like a great team. And this is somebody who was a first-round pick, so it's not like a gem. I think Brian Burns is going to be
a super duper star. Yeah.
I was so wrong on him. And this actually, I think, is a part of a bigger conversation about the types of pass rushers who are succeeding in the league right now. But I had a big argument about him and Danny Kelly. And Danny was like, Danny loved him coming into the draft. And I just don't like those long rangy rushers.
Bendy. He's like the ultimate like prospect for the word bendy is used. Yeah. But he was undersized. He was skinny.
I thought he was too tall to bend the corner, though. I thought he was going to need to be like a Leonard Floyd change of direction, I get my work done on twist sort of player. Yeah. But he actually bends to the quarterback in a really impressive way. But I also think that as holding calls are less prevalent now, I think being able to be a lateral quickness change of direction rusher is more important now than it was 3 years ago. And he's that exact sort of player. So, I mean, he made some really nice plays against Detroit, but that's how he's been all year. He's been one of the most efficient per play pass rushers in the entire league. So for a team that's really rebuilding its defense, similar to what we talked about with the Rams, where you just need one or two blue chip guys, he is going to be your blue chip guy up front for them as they try to figure out what they want to put around him.
So would you say in the way that Justin Herbert broke our 6'6" quarterbacks to our too tall paradigm, Brian Burns might be ranking your 6'5" is too tall for an edge rusher paradigm?
Yes. I'm starting to rethink it.
Your point about the holding is great because the way these players are officiated, because I was thinking about that with like some of the offensive linemen who have been having better season. The poster child is Garrett Bowles, right?
Yeah.
But if that would change, and I'm sure the smart GMs are thinking about that ahead of the draft, right? Like you might be looking at a guy who's like a little grabby and you're like, well, you know, they're not really calling it anymore in the NFL. And that's something to consider ahead of the draft. I just think generally like the Panthers defense, Brian Burns was good last year, but it kind of felt like I don't have his numbers in front of me, but some of them were unsustainable. They weren't unsustainable, but they were like, you know, the sacks were, the ratio of sacks to pressures was a little bit out of whack, you know, one of those things. So I was kind of like, let me see another year of this. And I can now confidently say that, like, I think he is absolutely a star in that defense. And every time I look at that defense, I'm once again surprised by the existence of a man named Phil Snow. But he is the defensive coordinator. He is a real human being, and he's doing a very good job with a very, very young defense. I think the Panthers have a lot to be excited about between him and obviously Chin gets a lot of praise as well. So brighter skies are ahead in Carolina. That's a fun pick. Brian Burns. I like that.
It's been really fun. There's guys that, and this is like really inside baseball, but the move that people have used for years, Robert Quinn was actually somebody who really kind of brought it to the league in a big way, was that cross chop move where you step inside and then kind of bounce back outside and you do a little swim over, and it's a change of direction move. And those are the types of moves that feel like they're working all the time now. And if you look at some of the guys who've kind of outperformed expectations as pass rushers this year, like Emmanuel Ogba, for example, has always had a really good cross chop move. And I just think that move is taking over the league in a way that makes a lot of sense. So he's one of those guys. And it's just really interesting. It's like certain things where, you know, in certain sports, you'll have these little tiny quirks that for whatever reason have their time. And I just think that move right now is having its time for change of direction pass rushers.
The cross chop. I love that. I mean, the other thing about Burns in the Lions game is, I mean, I'm not like a, you know, a pass rush move specialist, but I'll take your word for that. But they were moving him around a lot. Like I had no idea where he was coming from half the time. And that again is a credit to Phil Snow. I make jokes about Phil Snow because he just has the most anonymous sounding name, but like
it's
he's legitimately doing a good job.
He's also just an anonymous defensive coordinator. Like when you were the coordinator at Temple and like that's all you've done is be a college coordinator, and now you're coming in with this very exciting head coach and this team that I think has a really bright future, like you're going to get some attention. I've been paying attention to the Phil Snow experience. It's gone better than I thought it would.
I feel like that Phil Snow is getting more mention here than any podcast this week. Speaking of bright futures, let's wrap by asking a question that I am very excited to hear your thoughts on. Are the Raiders a legitimate contender?
No. I think the answer is no, because I don't think they're there this year. But I do think that they could be one by next year with a couple moves on defense. I think that John Gruden is for real. You want to talk about, so teams hiring offensive-minded head coaches that call plays, that being the way to just maintain relevance because you can't lose that guy. That's what John Gruden is. John Gruden is no different than Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay or any of those guys. He's just a known quantity that's like 58 years old, so he doesn't seem young and exciting. What John Gruden is doing right now with the Raiders, in my opinion, is pretty much the same thing that Andy Reid did in his second act with the Chiefs. I think the amount of creativity and grafting modern ideas onto tried and true West Coast principles, I think it's the exact same thing, but John Gruden isn't like a big lovable guy, so we don't give him the same credit that we do with Andy Reid.
Yeah, he became a cartoon character with the GM stuff and the, you know.
Exactly.
And then people forgot like all these young coaches we love are like literally from Gruden's school. Literally, they went
Shanahan
to school.
And McVay.
But the Reid comparison is really interesting, Robert, because again, from a team building perspective, basically kind of what you're suggesting is like, he just needs a Spagnuolo. Like he just needs an average defense, because this is not an average defense. Right now, this offense can score on anyone. I feel comfortable saying that. But the defense, you know, first of all, they were obviously missing a zillion guys against Kansas City, including some of their best players like Maurice Hurst, Cleveland Furrell. Right. And I think there are games where you see flashes from some. I mean, even in the Chiefs game, I thought the Trayvon Mullen, who had the pick was lucky. Frankly, you know, it was obviously due to a miscommunication with the receiver, with Robinson. But that was one of his best games of the year. It was one of Jonathan Abram's worst games of the year. Like it feels like they're still a ways away from putting together sort of a consistent effort where like at every level they have NFL players. But to go bring it back full circle, do you think would you rather have a balanced team with like a B offense and a B defense, or a team like the Raiders with an A offense and a C defense? I think that's kind of what the question ultimately becomes. Like, who's better to pace with Chiefs, you know, a team that can get into a track meet with them, or a team that actually is just good?
I think I'd rather have the great offense and the bad defense, because you could get a random game from your defense whenever. I think that's how you should build. But I just don't think that they're ready to play against teams like Pittsburgh and the Chiefs. I think that even if that's the blueprint that I'd like to follow if I was building a team, I still think that's not enough this year. I mean, you watch them play, like Nelson Aguilar being a real NFL player in this offense, and him coming into that offense being like, oh man, Nelson Aguilar can play a little bit. It's the exact opposite on their defense. There is no chance you're going to stumble into a guy like Darius Williams with the Raiders. That's the problem, is that when you have guys that have a talent deficiency, which they still do at every single level, and you're not giving them any schematic advantages, that's how you end up with the current Raiders defense. And I just think they need somebody who can come in and put their guys in the right spots to make up for the lack of talent they have.
Yeah.
And who the heck knows? Maybe those guys are better than we think they are, but they don't have a shot right now in the same way that guys on the Rams who are no-name players have one on every single snap.
They need they need a star and then a couple veterans. I think that's kind of where because I don't think any – like I like Cleveland Furrell. I really do. And you know, every now and then Max Crosby is making plays, but they don't have any stars on this defense. I like Mo Hurst.
The problem is though, when you consistently strike out on big money free agents,
Cleveland Furrell was also God. But well, even, like, I get an L on Corey Littleton. He was awesome with the Rams, dude. Like, I don't know what the hell.
That's the thing, though. When that stuff happens consistently, it becomes, it's not a problem about the players anymore. It's a problem about the structure you're putting the players into. When that's you're missing on LaMarcus Joyner and Nick Kwiatkowski, Nick Kwiatkowski's been fine. But when you're missing on Littleton and LaMarcus Joyner and those types of guys consistently, you need to take a look at the structure you're putting those guys in, not just tack it up as, oh, well, we missed on that guy. That's where you get into trouble.
Yeah, and then Joyner, of course, is like a great example because it's like he's playing out of position. So then it becomes about the team. They did sign Tack McKinley. We'll see if he plays. And Vic Beasley. Interesting.
Just dart throws. Get
something up front.
We're trying to recreate the 2018 Falcons pass rush doesn't seem to be the best idea. I think there are better avenues to quality.
We should acknowledge that Derek Carr is a top five quarterback in the NFL right now. Okay.
He's been unbelievable.
It's been acknowledged. It's been acknowledged. It's a thing that's happening in the year 2020.
I'm taking so many L's on this show. Being wrong on Brian Burns coming out and thinking that Derek Carr would not be the quarterback of the Raiders by next season. I am wrong about a lot of things.
Rare W for me, because this has been a positive Derek Carr spit. So I took an L on Littleton, but like, and you know, Herbert, I've taken like an L every week on, but this has been a Raiders fans who listen to this podcast know that I've been quietly positive about Derek Carr for a couple years now. I think I maybe told you this, Robert, but in 2016, when I was writing for ESPN, the magazine, they assigned me a Derek Carr cover story. Like they were like, he's going to be an MVP. This is before he hurt his leg. And I was like, I kind of don't think Derek Carr is the MVP. And he's actually just has had some primetime comebacks. So I came back and I just wrote an entire story about the offensive line. You can look it up. You wrote about the Raiders because they were awesome.
Yes.
You know, and that's when my love affair with Rodney Hudson began. I feel like I'm speaking your language now. So,
trust me, this is exactly the type of stuff I want to be talking about.
Rodney Hudson, most underrated player in the NFL. Speak truth to power.
And it actually is really cool because the one thing about Carr that has never been in question is the way he plays. He's so cerebral.
Oh, yeah.
And it's almost, and Nate is talking about this on our
show. Hudson together, man.
Exactly.
Like freaking.
When you walk. And being able to hear them before the snap is incredible because these are two guys who are just so in tune with protections and looks and everything else. But it almost feels like that's crippled him at times. His mind is just so fast and racing so much that he's like, all right, here, check down. He doesn't have that playmaking gene to him despite having a ridiculous arm.
So I thought
coming into the year that he was just Alex Smith 2017. Like that's what he was. He was the captain of this perfectly made race car, and he just didn't have the persona or the personality to drive it. And now you see some of those out of structure playmaking type stuff come up, and it just turned them into a completely different offense. I didn't think he had this gear, and that's what I thought would have ultimately hold them back.
I completely agree with you that he's cerebral, but some Raiders fan at home is screaming, that's why he throws it away on fourth down. the scrambles and the out of structure stuff has almost been more surprising to me than the deep shots, to be honest.
Because,
like, you know, dude doesn't want to get hit out there, but he's been a different guy this season. It's been really fun to watch. Okay, as always, we wrap with five questions for our guest, four from me, one from Lenny.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
First question. Did Brian Flores screw up by benching Tua? For performance, per his explanation.
I guarantee you it wasn't for performance. I think that that's one of those.
Why didn't he just say that then? Why didn't he just say he was hurt?
Because then you, by saying that, then you're essentially admitting that you're putting Ryan Fitzpatrick in harm's way.
Ryan Fitzpatrick puts himself in harm's way.
That's also true. But I think that's the right way to frame it. I appreciate the fact that the Dolphins have made every single decision about this team with the next 3 to 5 years in mind at every single turn. And that's another one. That's another one of them. And okay. I'm totally fine with it.
Imagine that Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't get picked at the end and that he throws the game winning touchdown. What the hell happens in Miami this week?
I think the two is the quarterback. Their ability to be committed to this has been extremely impressive. They have been steadfast in every single decision that they've made. It's a level of commitment and just grit that we typically don't see with NFL teams who make decisions willy-nilly based on everything that just happened 10 seconds ago.
I think you're right. And this might be just because I'm like a professional hot taker gas bag on TV, and I'm like, we'd be talking about it nonstop. We'd be killing him. But I don't know. That was just what was going through. I was like, damn it, if Fitzpatrick wins this game, this is going to get really weird. But I agree with you, Robert. I think you're right. I think they would have stuck to their guns. Question number two, did you finish the leftovers?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I feel like this is a conversation we can't have on this podcast, because if people haven't watched it, I don't want to ruin it for them. So did you love the ending?
Yes, I did. I loved it. It was definitely a payoff that was worth it. I think the problem is, and not a problem, it's actually worked out well for me. I went into it after having watched Watchmen. So when other people said, the first season is slow or whatever, I was like, well, I'm ready for that. I know the payoff is going to be good because I had just experienced it Watchmen's with the last great. Lindelof show. So it was just easy for me to kind of wade through those quieter moments. It was It was fantastic. It was probably my favorite TV viewing experience I've had in like several years.
Did you do Halt and Catch Fire? Did we talk about this?
No, I didn't, which I should, because I'm a big Scoot guy.
That's next for you. All right.
I should, because I love Mackenzie Davis and Scoot McNairy.
Oh my God.
Those are two of my favorites.
I've inducted so many people into the Church of Halt and Catch Fire. That's like one of my, along with The Leftovers, like one of my four favorite shows of all time.
I feel like she's underutilized. She's been really good. Everything I've ever seen her in.
Every single person on the show Halt and Catch Fire is underutilized.
I just think about San Junipero all the time and how good she was in it. And like she's a fantastic actress.
She's in a new rom-com with Kristen Stewart. I saw an advertisement for. I'm not sure. I might be making that up. Question number three. Is it Jalen Hurts' time?
I don't think so. Not
this is
yet.
A no right answer, by the way. There's no right answer to this question.
I think that's an off-season consideration. It's that's so hard to do. I mean,
the money's so bad.
When you think about the contract and the commitment that you give to him, I just think that's a really hard decision to make. At every level of the organization, like that's an ownership decision. And I just don't know if that's an ownership decision you can make when you can still win the division. I mean, that's a stupid, like, I hate when people say that. Like, well, they can still win the division. The fact that the Washington football team yanked their quarterback because they could still win the division when this year does not matter at all is still silly to me. But again, it's just, I think that's going to color their thinking a little bit. So I do think he starts till the end of the year. After that, I think all bets are off.
I cannot believe this Washington game on Thursday is relevant. I just like, I'm looking at the schedule. I mean,
every single cent of Terry McLaurin stock in fantasy. So I've paid way more attention to the Washington football offense than anyone ever should.
Here's the one take I'll give. Cowboys defense quietly been improving.
That's how defenses work.
I know. They were never, I mean, it's like, guys, DeMarcus Lawrence is a good football player. At some point he's going to start looking like, okay, you know what? We're not getting into it. I don't want to get into it. Let's talk about Thanksgiving.
Cowboys to win to be the number one seed in the NFC coming into the season. I still think it's an okay choice. I'm still not embarrassed about it.
I pick them too. And honestly, if Dak Prescott was their quarterback, I think they would be fine now. All right. Question number four. What is the best Thanksgiving side?
I should have thought more about this. I have really developed an affinity for sweet potatoes as I've gotten older. They're a huge part of my diet. And just a really good sweet potato casserole with some Rice Krispies and some marshmallows. That's hard to beat for me. I think that's my answer.
I feel bad blowing up his spot, but he blows up his own spot a lot. Michael Jr., who's lovely, one of my best friends, recently texted me, what is the difference between sweet potato pie and pumpkin pie? And I had to explain to him that sweet potatoes and pumpkins are two different things. I'm sorry, Mike. Okay, as always, the correct Thanksgiving side is mashed potatoes. All right, as always, the last question.
They have to be made well, though. Mashed potatoes can be really mediocre. You got to throw a ton of butter in them
to
move the needle for me.
I think stuffing is the ultimate high variance side. Because really good stuffing is really good, but really bad stuffing is like
I think that's right.
Regurgitated dog barf. something to think about ahead
of Thanksgiving. Stuffing has a lower floor than mashed potatoes do, but I still think that stuffing has so much higher ceiling. I think the mashed potatoes can be mediocre. They're consistently mediocre, but I think it's hard to make them great. That's what I'd say.
Pecan pie is also the best pie. Okay, so as always, the last question comes from Lenny. I didn't write it. I'm sorry. Okay. This could be worse. He wants to know, what does it feel like rooting for a team with a worse outlook than the Jets?
I get depressed about it like 3 times a day. Because if there's something, there's always something to remind me of it. Like yesterday when I made a joke on Twitter about which GM would take Aaron Donald over Patrick Mahomes, everyone's like, well, it's the GM of your team. I can't escape it. It's around every single corner.
Would people like me are like, oh, being a Seahawks fan is so hard. It's constantly dramatic. Like me and Danny Kelly, do you just want to murder us?
Yes, I've said that to Danny Kelly multiple times in my life. Get the hell out of here. Somebody sent me the graph recently. And it's just the EPA per play finishes of the Bears offenses over the last 20 years. The Bears have had 2 above average offenses in the last 20 years. One was in 2013, the random Josh McCown year.
Hell yeah.
Where, for whatever reason, Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall were just in God mode. And it was just absolutely ridiculous.
Amazing season.
And then the other one was the first year under Nagy, when Mitch was just doing some random weird stuff and they lucked into it. For the most part, I have rooted for a team with no offensive hope and no quarterback since I was alive. It's horrible. I mean, even when there are moments back when the game was a little bit different in like 2005, 2006, when defense mattered more, you could build a consistent defense. They had a historically great run on defense under Lovie Smith. Historically great. I loved those teams. But at your core, you still understand that the most important position in sports, you have no answer. And that's been my entire existence since I started watching football.
On that note, happy Thanksgiving.